This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGM. Terry Savage joins us Wednesdays at this time, the Money Lady. You can find her at terrysavage.com. Terry, I don't know where to start. Should we pick it up where we left off last week, or do you want to say something about the markets in general?
No, I don't want to say anything about the markets because I say the same thing. I'm going to say it right now.
Okay.
This is the market. It gets overenthusiastic one way or the other way. It gets happy or down. And we're at high levels, so these percentage increases, you know, a 600-point down day is not as frightening as a 50-point down day was 35 years ago. And I do want to reiterate the warning that what we've experienced is it's down 500, 600 points. Oh, my goodness. The next 3 weeks, this happened at the beginning of August, it's back up. Ha, see? Told you so. Everything's fine. You should always just be in the stock market. And over the long run, that works. If you're about to retire or retiring, the Wall Street Journal had an interesting article about the 401k millionaires, people who suddenly can look and say, hey,
more now than
we
ever.
Got $1 million. Look, yeah. The market's at all-time highs, more or less, within a few hundred points, you know, a few percent. So everybody feels better, feels that's invested, that's thinking about retirement. You're working with some big numbers. But I'll just repeat this. I, in my own lifetime of investing as a grown-up, have lived through three bear markets that took the averages down 50%. That was scary at the time. Now, in hindsight, we're at new highs. You know, all you had to do is ride it out. But when you are making plans, this is the money we have. We need to withdraw enough to live on every year in addition to Social Security. When you start seeing the market go down 20, much less 50, 30, 40%, you reach a moment where you go, we're going to lose it all. Of course, you won't lose it all. It's not the end of America. But when you get to that panic moment and sell, that, of course, is what makes the bottom. Everybody panics. So the wise thing to do, if you're at a point in life where this is your critical pool of funds and you just don't want to see it drain too quickly, is to take some and set it aside. You will miss some upside. Yes, you will. I hope you live long enough to say, gee, back in, you know, 2024, I took 30% out of the market and put it in money market equivalents. It's not yielding very much. And look at it. Now the Dow's at 75,000 or something.
Yeah.
But you'll sleep at night. And that's what's critical at that stage of life. That's
because you want to live long enough to be able to realize the appreciation in a down market. So if you're still contributing, or you've just got money parked in equities and the market's down, you want to at least be able to live long enough to see it get above that mark.
It's not just the keeping score part. It's the living through it part. Now, if you're 40 years old and you just, oh, look at my 401k is already up to $212,000. And gee, I didn't even notice that they're taking it out. It's a tax deduction. Yeah, I think I know what I'm in. You know, I'm in the stock fund or something. It's not going to impact your life at 42 or 43 if the market goes down. Yeah. So you don't think about it. But at 71, you go, oh, my gosh, we were counting on all that money to live. You don't have time to wait it out or emotional stability to
wait
it out.
My dad's 96. My mom's 90.
I love them knocking on wood.
We just parked all of their money. Well, we did a couple of years ago in out of the equities and whatever my brother put it in, but something that's just interest-bearing and is safe. It's not going to lose anything. They've lost a lot of money on the upside for the last year or so.
They have foregone a lot of money
yes,
on the upside. They didn't lose. They just didn't make
it. They made 4% and they didn't make 14%.
Yes. Well, that's the part of it. So that's what, as an individual, it's until this moment hits you where you watch money disappear. I told you the story. I'll tell it again probably 10 times until the next bear market comes. I was a young trader on the first woman trader on the floor of the options exchange. I know just the man. His name was Paul. He was balding. I knew he was old because he was balding. This is a long time ago. And I looked at him and I said, Paul, all the stocks are down. I mean, these are the first 30 stocks were the big, were IBM and all the best companies of the day.
GE.
And they, and I said, Paul, all of them are down. And I remember saying to him, where did all the money go? And he looked down at me and said, well, my dear, it went to money heaven. and until you've had that experience, you know, it teaches you a lesson, makes you, but when I say conservative, it makes you more balanced.
Terry Savage, the money lady, is here, the syndicated columnist, terrysavage.com. Let's pick it up where we left off last week, which was a guy.
This is interesting. By the way, the red ink just popped up on my charts. The market's now in negative territory by about 20 points. So we had a glitch or something in the phone thing, and we were talking to a man. I know his name was Doug. I hope he's out there listening today. And he just posed a very interesting question. As I recall, he said, I'm getting ready to retire. I think he said he was never married. He has no children and not a lot of no family, I think, is what he said. And he was talking about the issues. We just got started getting into it. The issues that I think were financial, but otherwise issues about being older and alone. And I find that I've heard that from a lot of women because I talk to women. And I thought if I could split myself into a million atoms, what I would be the professional handholder for everybody, not to tell them what to do with their investments, but just to help them get through situations like what I'll describe. Anyway, I thought it was so interesting that I spent the weekend writing a column about it. It hasn't run yet. It'll run next weekend. I'll give you a little bit of a preview. You know, it was 60 years ago, I was doing some research, how would I tee this up, that the Surgeon General came out with a cancer warning 60 years ago, that people, it really had an impact. And just last spring, the Surgeon General came out saying that loneliness is a huge epidemic. And then I found some other statistics. You'll have to read them. I don't have the column in front of me, but about the number of people living alone and the aging of the population and longevity. I just wrote a column about longevity. I guess I'm thinking about those kinds of things now. And how many people are living alone. So there's two tracks to this column. The first one is things financial. Everybody's going to tell you, as I would, well, you need to get your ducks in order. You need to be organized. You need to create a will, a revocable living trust, healthcare powers of attorney. And yeah, okay. But the question is, if you don't have a family member, or if your friends are all your age as you really get older, are they going to be around to be able to handle those things for you? Who do you name as a successor trustee for your revocable living trust?
Right.
Not to forget, who do I give stuff to? Let's just suppose you live long enough to make your lifetime match your money. But who's going to handle all those powers that you would like to give to someone to handle? And I started researching about trust companies. If you go to a big bank, I mean, there are a bunch of them that have the name Trust in the name, the Northern Trust, or, you know, all the Chase is a trust department. But you're not setting up a relationship with Sue Smith. Sue Smith, that nice young gal you talked to that helped you do all that, is going to leave and go to another job by the time you need help. So big institutions are not set up to help individuals do these kinds of things. Many certified financial planners, you know, I particularly like the fee-only fiduciary ones, work with trust companies where they manage your investment money, but the trust company would handle things like the estate, dealing with your estate if you pass on. But that still leaves a bit of a gap called, who would you call at 3 o'clock in the morning? When after you call 911, who's going to meet you and be your advocate at the hospital? And I think this is something we haven't done enough planning about. I think there should be some more intergenerational planning, even if it's not a relative. And so maybe it's someone who lives in your condo. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a caregiver, if you can trust that person, you know. Maybe it's something that religious organizations ought to be thinking more about, not just bringing food, you know, meals on wheels, but being able to establish relationships between trusted people, because there's a whole generation aging and alone. I wish I could give you a solution. I wrote a whole column about it and some thoughts.
I wanted to just read a couple of texts that have come in.
Okay.
All over the map. You ready to roll?
Yep.
It's 12:24 on WGN News in 6 minutes. Hey, Terry, have any decisions been made about income, quote unquote, from selling things on eBay, online platforms? I got a text document based on my PayPal goods and services transactions, which I have to account for, but the whole thing seemed unclear to me.
It was. I'd have to look that up. The last I remember, they suspended that.
Yep.
And I'm not sure when it comes back. It's a great question. It forced me to do some research. Post it on my Ask Terry blog at terrysavage.com, and I will find out the latest on when that comes back.
Hey, John and Terry, if my wife, who is retired, takes $30,000 from her IRA, will that affect her Medicare and Social Security payments?
It won't affect her Social Security payments, but that $30,000 on which she will have to pay ordinary income taxes, not state income taxes if you live in Illinois. Our retirement plan withdrawals are free from state income taxes. But that could put her, that could do two things to her. Could boost her or you in a joint return into a higher tax bracket. And number two, because it is her income and her Medicare Part B premium is based on her income, it could mean that she will get a hefty increase for a year or two. Now, they won't, that won't happen immediately. They look back 2 years and say, oh, yeah, Susan took, oh, look at her income jumped, so we're going to raise her Medicare premium. You can appeal that after a year and say it was only a one-time thing, but it could increase your Medicare Part B.
My wife recently retired and moved her 401k to a managed plan by Fidelity, where she had her 401k. Are they considered a fiduciary, Fidelity?
It depends on what plan you have, and I will say this. Fidelity is probably the greatest fiduciary institution. I mean, they manage trillions in money, and I've had the numbers for something I wrote recently. In fact, I think I have it up here, how much they manage. But it depends on who you signed up with to manage. Fidelity also hosts platforms for financial advisors who will say to you, yes, I'm managing your money, and I'm managing it at Fidelity, which makes you feel really great because it's a great company, but they may not disclose all the fees or that they've put you in funds that have fees that are distributed to the advisors and so forth. So it depends exactly on what program you're in at Fidelity.
Would you, but you're not blanket advising people not to manage their money through Fidelity?
Well, you can manage your own money through Fidelity or Vanguard at the very lowest cost possible. I mean, those are the least expensive providers. And Fidelity does offer some services, and they fully disclose the costs. But if you've signed up with a financial advisor that handles your account on the Fidelity platform, you could still be subject to higher fees, higher costs, and so forth. So you need to know what you signed up for. That's really important.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch, and Terry Savage is in our studio, and as she often does, she says, oh, wait, I want to say something else about the thing I was talking about.
Okay. First of all, you know, I love Fidelity. I love Vanguard. I have accounts at both of them. And I just want to make clear what it is. Someone asked about, I had a 401k. My company's plan was managed by Fidelity. Now I went into one of their managed accounts. And my point was, what kind of managed account?
They wanted to know if that's the same as fiduciary.
Well, so here's the thing. Fidelity has a robo-advisor, Fidelity Go, okay? It is free portfolio management if using their funds on balances under $25,000. Hmm. Above that amount, it could be up to 35 basis points, 0.35%. So that's the robo. You know, you tell it what your age and your goes to the risk tolerance. You're
Sounds
not talking
like
to anybody, okay?
Yeah.
Fidelity also has something called find a financial consultant, find a financial advisor. They make a point that any of those who are listed on there that you can search for, you search by a zip code. I just searched 60610 downtown Chicago and found a whole listing of them. There's offices Fidelity has around Chicago. And you can look at their bios. They're certified financial planners, many of them they talk about, and you can schedule an appointment. Those fees have to be fully disclosed, whatever that advisor charges. Is it a 1% based on all your assets under management? Does that include, well, you want to keep $500,000 of your $1 million in the bank or CDs or something like that?
Right, that's a good question.
You shouldn't pay them on that.
Yeah.
What else are they going to do for you besides investment advice? Are they a full-fledged certified financial planner? And then, of course, you want to ask them to sign the pledge they're a fiduciary. Now, there's another whole third category of advisors that you won't find through Fidelity, but you may find a financial planner out there advertising, come to my chicken lunch, dinner, and, oh, yes, I do financial planning, and we use Fidelity funds. That's designed, and they do. But there are Fidelity funds with different classes. I wrote a column many years ago about how the funds with either back-end loads, so when you sell, there's more commission, or with it high management fees that go back to the advisors and so forth. There are all kinds of different versions of basically the same Fidelity fund in different fees. So Fidelity is like the great place to be. But you need to know exactly what you're paying. You're paying next to nothing and listening to a computer, which is a lot of people are doing. Fidelity has $4 trillion of assets under management that they take care of. So a lot of those are doing it that way. Others are working with advisors through the Fidelity platform, and you have to check and see, is this advisor doing everything
or just
investments?
Is there a load that you think on either side of the line you should or should not be? Like 0.035 is not much, 1.5 is. Where's the line?
Well, okay, there's a line. I think personally that if you have over $1 million in assets, you should just, if you are just doing investment advice, okay, it shouldn't be more than 0.5%, and it shouldn't be charged on what you've clearly set aside as your chicken money. But when you're talking about meeting with a financial planner, like a fee-only financial planner, it should have nothing to do with assets under management, although they will be giving you investment advice, because they're going to look at you and say, what, you never updated your will since your kids were born? Wait, you need to create a revocable living trust. Have you thought about the tax consequences of this? Maybe it's time to do a partial Roth conversion because this is a tax issue. What about long-term care insurance? How would you pay? What about your life insurance? Mm-hmm. Let's see the beneficiaries on all your IRAs. Yeah. A real comprehensive CPA who's a fee-only fiduciary is going to do a lot more. So you're not just going to be paid based on assets under management. In fact, that's the worst way to do it in that case.
Terry, can you move your IRA from one institution to another without a penalty?
Yes, you can, but you will have to. It won't matter on a tax basis, but let's just say that you bought in your IRA 15 years ago, you bought Microsoft and Amazon and you name it, a whole bunch of stocks, and you're so proud that you've owned them for years and years. When you do a direct rollover from one custodian to another, they aren't going to roll over those stocks. By the way, it doesn't matter because when you take the money out of an IRA, it's all ordinary income. They're going to convert that IRA, all those funds or stocks, into cash and then wire that money directly to the new custodian. And then if you want to go back, there's no tax consequence. So if you want to go back and rebuy Amazon and Microsoft, you can do that.
Terry, we're closing on a new mortgage on a new house in Minnesota. We're locking the rate right now. How much will it cost me to refi in 6 months or 3 months? David Hochberg was on just before you. He wants you to refi about every 25 minutes because he thinks rates are going to come down.
Well, I was just going to say rates are going to come down. So what you would like to ask them is, if you're closing now, do they have a program whereby if the mortgage rate drops, look, any minute the Fed's going to say we're cutting rates, and that means that rates will come down. And what a shame to be locked in today, you know, September 6th or 7th or whenever
you're
closing.
Doesn't sound like these people can wait, though. They're buying a house.
But the point is, what you should ask them is, you know what, don't you have some kind of a program where if rates drop, you'll refi at no cost? Within the 90 days, you should. They want the business. They want the fee that they get for making your mortgage. And if they're not the ones that will do it, you might want to shop around.
I'll just say this to that listener. David was shooting numbers and strategies. And if you go back to WGNradio.com, listen to the podcast of my show, you'll see the link to the David Hochberg conversation. And listen to that once or twice, because in some instances it'll make sense, in some instances it won't. But David obviously wants the business, but I also think he made a good argument for, with the rates dropping, he didn't want you to wait. He said, go ahead and get the house now, but if rates drop again, depending on how much they drop and how much you're borrowing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would not suggest postponing the purchase, but I would suggest at this moment, when everybody in the world knows rates are coming down, that you have a little bit of leverage, and you should say, are you sure? I've seen other programs where if the rates drop in the first 90 days or 180 days, you will drop the rate on my mortgage because you're going to pay to refinance.
This is Dennis for Terry Savage. You're on WGN. Hi, Dennis. What can we do for you?
Hi, Terry. Very quick story. One of my grandmother's most enjoyable moments, she followed you religiously. She took zero income, basically, and built up a lot of money for her disabled child to live on when my grandmother passed, and one of her proudest moments was when she met you at a luncheon here in Northwest Indiana, some, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, something like that. So,
yeah, well, I've been around for a long time. So now what's happened to her child, which would be your uncle or what?
My aunt, yeah, and she was managed to be well taken care of off the little nest egg that my grandmother put together.
That just proves it can be done.
What's your question today there, Dennis?
So, the strategy using some of the zero-fee funds, like Fidelity has a bunch of them, Total Market Index and some other ones, and just use that plus, depending on your risk tolerance, 20, 30, 40% of just the government index funds and really have really super low fees. Wondering what your opinion is on that.
I've spent 30, 40 years now. I guess I have to say that I go back that far since your grandmother saw me speak 30 or 40 years ago. I was one of the first, when people didn't know about Fidelity funds or Vanguard funds, to say you can do this on your own with index funds. I believe you can do that. You don't have to beat the market. All you have to do is be the market. In hindsight, that's proved to be a wonderful strategy. And since I eat my own cooking, I thank myself for following that strategy. I know that there are people who want their hands held, who, you know, maybe good at something else. Maybe they're good at plumbing, or maybe they're good at needlepoint, stuff that I wouldn't even attempt, or electrical stuff, you know, or whatever it is, and they want help. So it's worth getting help. But if you can do it on your own, by all means, and Fidelity or Vanguard funds are the lowest cost funds, and you just sort out how much risk you're willing to take. But what happens is people forget about risk. I just go back to where I came in today. All we really remember is the market's going up. And every time it goes down, it's going up again. That so scares me. I don't call the turns in the market. But when everybody goes, oh, yeah, so it's down 600 points. It did that last month. Did that this month. It's coming back. Don't worry about it. Way back, one of the earliest lessons I learned was the market always fools the greatest number of people. And right now, we have massive investment in equities. I just saw some numbers about 401k plans. I've never been higher percentage invested in equities. And so it's just worth thinking about the fact that markets go up and down.
And we should be invested in equities, right?
Over the long run, stocks have outperformed inflation. There's never been a 20-year period where you lost money in a diversified large company portfolio, the S&P 500 with dividends reinvested. So yeah, the question is, where are you in your life and in your heart that you can ride it out?
312-981-7200 with Terry Savage. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio. Here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. United States Steel says thousands of job cuts could happen if its acquisition by Nippon Steel is blocked. U.S. Steel operates facilities in Northwest Indiana. The company says without the support of Nippon, it would have to pivot away from blast furnaces, a move that would imperil jobs and undermine the competitiveness of the American steel industry. Politicians and union leaders have been pushing to stop the acquisition by the Japanese company so that the American steel industry doesn't come under foreign control. Nippon has promised to invest nearly $3 billion in U.S. Steel's older mills, including $300 million for the Gary Works facility. Chicago-based Molson Coors Beverage Company is cutting some of its diversity efforts after a right-wing activist threatened to target the company. Bloomberg reports Molson Coors will no longer engage with the Human Rights Campaign's corporate rankings. Molson Coors will also scrap supplier diversity goals and executive pay linked to employee diversity. Company joins Ford, Lowe's, Deere & Company, Harley-Davidson, and others in rolling back diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, policies. Right-wing activists have been pressuring the companies to drop activism and focus solely on making products. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Now the business of food, and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And yesterday we heard something really surprising about a liquor that Chicago seems to love to hate. I'm talking about Malort.
It actually does have curative and medicinal properties to it for killing stomach worms.
Okay, more about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, so apparently a good time to drink Malort in the early 1900s was when you had worms in your belly, and that was a problem for us before refrigeration and other food safety advances circumstances came around, and that medicinal quality allowed Malort's maker, a Swedish immigrant to Chicago named Carl Jepsen, to sell it during Prohibition. Well, now, a century later, Tremaine Atkinson's CH Distillery in East Pilsen is cranking out the Malort, which is one way to say welcome to Chicago.
The Chicago handshake is a shot of Malort and traditionally a can of Old Style.
He says there was a lot of that when the Democrats were in town.
And usually the setup is, this is a real Chicago thing to do, and then getting the fun of watching people's reactions to this very unusual bitter liquid.
Malort is still made the way Carl Jepsen did, with wormwood imported from Sweden, and it's more popular than ever.
Pretty much every bar in Chicago has at least one bottle of Malort.
And it has its own internet memes and slogans,
such as Malort when you want to unfriend somebody in person, Malort for when you know you're not getting your security deposit back. This one always makes me cringe, but it is popular. Malort, these pants.
Nope, can't use that one on the radio. CH makes other booze with Illinois farmers lending a hand.
The only vodka that's actually handmade from Illinois grain that's grown in Kane County and made all the way from scratch right here in the city.
Awesome. And back to Malort. Do you know anybody who really likes it?
I like Malort a lot. It's got a little sweetness up front. You know, maybe 5 seconds in is where you start to get the bitter. If you don't have anything else, that bitter hangs out for a good 15 minutes. And I kind of enjoy that journey.
On the food calendar, it's National Macadamia Nut Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Terry Savage, the money lady at terrysavage.com, will sit with us for about 7 more minutes. By the way, Terry, I know someone who saved a lot of money for college. Their kids then got such good grades that they don't need the money they saved for college. They got kids graduating from college in a couple of years with all of this money in the bank within the Illinois program.
What a lovely, oh, from Brightstart. Okay, yeah. What a lovely idea that is.
Well, but now they get, what are they going to do with that money?
Well, they're going to
Because you can't buy a new car with it.
Well, okay, well, let me give you some thoughts. Number one, they're so smart, maybe they're going to graduate school. That would be a good use for it, so don't give it up so fast. Cousins in the same family could use that money.
Cousins can.
Yes.
All right, but that's still the tail.
Okay, well, there are now two choices. The bad choice and the better choice. The bad choice is your kids didn't use it. They're not going to graduate school. There's nobody else in the family that's going
to
use it.
Or
you don't want to save it for your grandchildren, right? So you can take the money out, but you will pay ordinary income taxes on all the gains and a 10% penalty, like taking money out early from an IRA. So you're going to give up a lot. You're going to, and the paying ordinary income taxes might put you in a higher tax bracket. Or as of last year, maybe it's just as of the year before, but I think it's just as of this last year, you can convert money from a 529 account into a Roth IRA. The 529 account had to have been open for at least 15 years, which sounds like that it was.
That's close.
Okay.
I mean, your kid normally
needs it. But it's not the parent that gets the benefit of this conversion. It's the beneficiary, the child, little Susie, who is beneficiary. So when Susie graduates and she's not going to grad school, doesn't need the money for that, and goes to work, she will be able to transfer up to $35,000 subject to the annual limits, which currently $7,000 for a person just graduating college. So she could take $37,000 every year and put it into a Roth IRA, tax and penalty free.
But that's only for $35,000. Some folks have $100,000. I mean, college is so expensive. So you're still stuck with $65,000.
That is what they call a very high class problem.
I know
have.
That. But okay, well, then I have an answer to that. Hold on. It doesn't seem to me like it's such a penalty, Terry, if in taking money out of a college savings plan, the earnings are taxed as ordinary income because that's income.
It might move you into a higher tax bracket. It might impact your Medicare Part B.
If I have to pay 10% on $100,000 that I've stowed away, I still have $90,000.
Right. And you started with $26,000 because it grew over those years.
You're
then you're going to pay ordinary income taxes on an additional $70,000 or $60,000 worth of income, which may put you in a higher tax bracket. So maybe a third of that's going in taxes. And so it might be better just to let your kids roll it over down the road. And I will bet since
they
this
have
is
it for
new,
their kids someday.
And they could save it for their kids. Absolutely, they could keep it going because you could save it for your own kids, yes.
Okay. Does Terry know if there are any financial investment classes for women who are just starting to learn about long-term investing? That's a good question.
Well, I think I hear about these things every once in a while at the local colleges and universities, mm-hmm. and that's where I would go, because anybody who's offering a class in Investing 101 is actually trying to get paid for that by gathering assets to manage, typically. So schools, all the local community colleges.
I think the JUCOs are very good about this. One more, we got to run. Terry, I have $20,000 in a chicken fund. What were you talking about a money market at your local bank? What is a money market exactly?
A money market account is like a savings account, but it has daily change in interest rates, keeping up with what's going on, and it allows you daily liquidity. So it's like the step up from the old passbook savings account, which really don't basically exist anymore.
Up to so many $100,000, it's
insured.
You're
insured up, exactly. It's FDIC insured. The interest rate fluctuates, and you can ask the bank what it's paying. And it gives you checks.
What is it?
So you can write a check. I'd have to look up
on
bank, bankrate.com, probably 3.25%, I would imagine. Go to bankrate.com and look up rates on bank money market deposit accounts. If we had one more commercial break here, I'd look it up and tell you.
We'll do it next Wednesday. We're out of time today.
Okay, thank you.
Terry Savage is the money lady. You can always find her stuff at terrysavage.com.